Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And 1 week ago from today, we were in Wembley Stadium in front of the largest wrestling crowd in history. Not just AEW history, not Chris Jericho history, in history, period. Paid crowd, largest paid crowd. 81,036 or whatever it was, the exact number. And one of the greatest weekends of my entire professional life. I'm going to talk about that today and go all through the entire week that I had. We had Dynamite on Wednesday, which was the Will Ospreay contract signing with Don Callis and myself and Will. And I think we did a great, great job of kind of putting the stamp on the match at Wembley. I know some people were saying that the build wasn't very good. I think the build was really good, to be honest, because we started the Don and I relationship way back in Edmonton, I think it was, which was 2 months ago. And the payoff was that Ospreay would attack me when he was available. He was in Japan doing the G1 Climax tournament, and he was only available on August 16th and the 23rd. So he attacked me the 16th, the 23rd. We did the contract signing where he did a tremendous promo. And I thought my promo was pretty good too. Delving into real life stories, when that story that I told about cold calling Will to tell him to tone things down so that he would have some longevity like me, that was real. Will and I have always had a great relationship. He actually called me a few times to get advice on how to be a heel. We've talked about, you know, when he was stuck in Japan during the lockdown, he called me for some advice. So Will and I have always had that friendship. So it was actually 100% legit what I said in my promo. And 100% legit what he said about this being a huge year for him and Wembley really putting the icing on the cake for the Will Ospreay story when his contract is up in a few months. He does have millions of dollars coming to him, no matter who he signs with. So I thought that was a really great build up there. So anyway, so Thursday, we go to the airport and get ready to fly from Atlanta to Heathrow. Right as we're about to take off, I get the message that Wyndham Rotunda had passed away, Bray Wyatt. At one point in time, we were really, really close friends, and not that anything happened, but you know, you don't see each other for a while and kind of drift apart because he's in one company and I'm in another, but we always had a great relationship, and I always kind of complimented and spoke to him about his ideas. And obviously, I worked with Bray dozens of times throughout the years in WWE around the world. We even had a cage match where I jumped off the top of the cage, I think at the crazy age of 44 years old or 43 years old, and how insane it was that Jericho's up there doing it. I'd do it now at 52, especially with someone like Bray who I could trust. And Bray was a creative faucet. So many ideas that he had, he would just keep pouring them out. Here's an idea. Here's an idea. Here's a, let's talk about that idea from a couple ideas ago. So just a great guy, and left us way too soon. And like I said, it just it hit me on the plane ride. I got really sad during the plane ride because, you know, you take off and it's just, you know, here we go. It's another flight and another, you know, day at the office. And then it really hits you like, oh my gosh, he's really gone. I'm never going to see him again. So kind of a sad flight. Landed in Heathrow, grabbed a couple hours sleep at the hotel, and then off to the O2 Forum in Kentish Town for Fozzie. Fozzie played a huge role in this weekend, especially since the show on Friday at the Forum was called Spotlight on London, and it was our biggest headlining show ever. Now, we didn't sell it out. It was a big room, but my goal was I wanted to sell 1,000 tickets. And full disclosure, we've done 800s a few times, but getting to that 1,000 as a headlining band, obviously we've played in front of 40,000 at Download, and we played in front of 30,000 opening for Iron Maiden at the Bank of California Stadium and all those sorts of things. But as a Fozzie on top of the bill, this was our biggest headlining show ever. And we crossed the 850 mark a couple weeks prior, or a week prior, whatever it was. But I really wanted to hit 1,000. And I was checking, you know, I think day of the show, we went into it at about 920. And then, you know, I'm checking, we got 960, and then it's 980. And come on, guys, let's go. Like, you know, I'll buy tickets if we have to. I didn't have to. We ended up selling 1,003 tickets. So we sold over 1,000 tickets in London, our biggest headlining show ever. And it was such a great gig. I mean, obviously, having the Chris Barris band open for us and Massive Wagons were both huge bands to play with, and to help fill up that room. And it was just a great show. Obviously, I had a new jacket made by Kate Lomax and kind of had, you know, a whole new look. We kind of finished up the set for the Save the World tour that we did the last few runs. You know, and so now we changed the set completely for this new tour that's about to start up. But that was kind of, I think we played the Vulture Club and Drinking with Jesus and, you know, tunes like that, God Pounds His Nails, that kind of they come in and out of the set. And they'll probably be gone. You know, Blitzkrieg Bop, I'm not sure if we're going to keep that. It was a great way to close. But, you know, obviously when you put out new songs and new records, you change up the set. And I think for us too, we like putting in something a little bit more obscure and older, like God Pounds His Nails this time and Vulture Club. So anyways, playing those shows, those tunes were amazing. And the crowd is insane. We've always had such a great relationship with the London crowd. And they were on fire. I mean, I remember walking out on stage and the whole place was just packed. Like the bottom floor is packed. We had the balcony closed off. Only AEW people were up there, which was cool to see. You know, Ortiz was up there and Christopher Daniels and a lot of the crew people and a lot of our publicity people and PR people. And always a blast to see them, have them up there. And just, I thought we played so good. We hadn't obviously played since June at the end of the Ugly Kid Joe tour. And with the schedules we had, we didn't get to rehearse really, but we know the songs off by heart. You know, we played them all. And the other thing is you got to work on the intros and outros. And Rich and I always do a dance during the Vulture Club, a little Cossack Irish dance. And I forgot, we hadn't played it in a while, and I forgot to join him for the Cossack dance. But just a great, great time. And then halfway through, actually right before Burn Me Out, right after I Still Burn, it just washed over me to say a few words about Wyndham and dedicate the show that night, the Fozzie show to Wyndham and the Wembley show to him, which was pretty emotional. Of course, people start singing He's Got the Whole World in His Hands, which is, you know, his ring song, kind of his calling card, his trademark. And that was really great to see. And of course, all the sites are posting it. And, you know, I didn't do that to get, you know, social media postings, but yeah, just a great gig with Fozzie. And like I said, for Rich and I to be doing this for over 23 years in a band together and have our biggest show ever, headlining show ever, on the Friday. And then, of course, to play Wembley Stadium, which we'll get into in a bit, on the Sunday. It was just such a great professional weekend, you know, and it's so awesome to be playing with those guys, with Billy and PJ and Grant. And, you know, we built this city on rock and roll. We built it from nothing. You know, I know there were people that thought, oh, Jericho singing, this is going to be, so many wrestling fans are going to go to Fozzie, and it was not the case. You know, it's kind of the opposite. A lot of people didn't want to listen to our band because I was in the band. Of course, this is just some kind of vanity project for me, like Ospreay said in his promo on Wednesday, which, of course, is not a vanity project. We've done a great job in building the band. And, of course, Judas kicked open a lot of doors. And now with five consecutive top 10 singles and all that sort of thing, it's just amazing to me to see where we're at as a rock and roll band. So, you know, and it's funny because when you get there, there was like the fog gun wasn't going to work. The CO2 gun wasn't going to work. And Simon's our great tour manager. I said, just figure out a way, man. Just make it work. This is London. It's 4 o'clock. You still got 5 hours before showtime. Figure out a way to make it work. And he did. The fog gun was working. The CO2 gun. Like I said, we played great. Highlights. Enemy's always a highlight with a double guitar solo. Judas. Everyone's singing all the words, which is amazing. Great sing-along for Lights Go Out. I love Spider in My Mouth. That's going to stay in the set. Of course, I Still Burn is a highlight. Sane. It's a great tune. It's the opening tune, which won't be the opening tune too much longer. I think probably our new song will be the opening tune when we finally get it done and released. So just once again, a great night surrounded by great fans. We did our VIP again where we had a fan come sing Judas with us, which was awesome. We've reinstated the individual photos in front of the Step and Repeat, which we dropped during the lockdown. And then now, of course, we brought it back. So the VIP was popping. The show was popping. And we were excited to go back to the UK in February. We're going to be announcing pretty soon what the tour is. So it was such a apropos for us to play our biggest headlining show ever in London, which has always been one of the best Fozzy cities in the UK. You know, such a great territory. And I always mention it was the first place where people ever really embraced Fozzy as a band. Still remember playing in Nottingham Rock City. It was the first gig Fozzy ever played in the UK, probably 2005, I guess it was, and I remember walking on stage, and there's a couple venues all encased in one area there in Nottingham, and I thought that I walked on the wrong stage. I couldn't believe how packed it was, and it's been like that ever since in the UK, in London, and it was just an amazing time and a great night for Fozzy and Fozzy fans in general, with many more great nights to come. All right, that was the Friday. When we come back, we're going to talk about Saturday and my guest appearance attack at Rev Pro on Will Ospreay.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right. Welcome back to Talk is Jericho, talking about one of the greatest weekends in my professional career. Talked about the Fozzy gig at the O2 Forum on the Friday. And then Saturday, I made a special guest appearance at the Rev Pro show. First of all, we went to Wembley Stadium to rehearse with Fozzy, which was amazing because we started the Judas with on top of a platform, if you didn't see it, and then I come out of a tunnel. Originally, I wasn't going to be on top of the platform, and actually Ortiz, who came to see Fozzy on Friday, happened to run into him. He was going over some stuff for his stadium stampede at the stadium on Saturday, and he said that you guys did a great job, you really enjoyed the show, but he said there's a suggestion that he wants to make of me doing the Freddie Mercury, hey-oh, from Live Aid, which of course is the greatest gig of all time. He said I should do that prior to Judas, and I was like, what a great idea that is. So I went to Rich Ward, ran it past him, he loved it. Which is great too, because actually Bubba Dudley months ago said you should have Fozzy play you to the ring. And I was like, seriously, you think so? And he's like, you got to do it. So Bubba came up with the idea of Fozzy me singing myself to the ring with Fozzy at Wembley. And Ortiz came up with the idea of me doing the Freddie Mercury hey-o. So not a lot of creativity or originality from Chris Jericho on that ring entrance. That just came from my friends. So I said, well, let's do the hey-os on top of the platform. But then they said, well, there's no way for you to get down in the tunnel. You got to do the hey-os in the tunnel. I said, no, I got to do it in the platform. So there's always a way to figure out. If anyone knows me, it's like, don't tell me why something can't happen. Tell me how we can make it work. So I said, well, get a ladder. Because what happened was when I was on top of the platform, I then had to walk down a set of stairs, walk across a row of chairs, which is where the soundboard was, and right there was like the vomitory, and there was probably about a 10-foot drop to the tunnel, the floor. So they set up a ladder, and then we retried the rehearsal of me doing the hey-os, then running down the steps, running across the area, and then going down the ladder. Well, the first time they had it the wrong way. So like what I mean by the wrong way is that the stairs were on the opposite side of where I was, so I kind of had to cross over the top of the ladder and walk down the back of the stairs rather than walking down the front part of the stairs. When I'm saying stairs, I mean ladder, the rungs, I guess. So the first time I did it, by the time I got to the bottom of the ladder, I was already singing "You Are Beautiful on the Inside," because I do the hey-os, then Rich hits the track, which starts the intro, and then Judas starts, with the band starts playing, and I've got probably, I don't know, 45 seconds to get from the top of the platform to the bottom. And the first time I failed miserably because I'm also holding the microphone, plus I was wearing tight jeans, so it was hard to kind of make my way down the entire ladder, but I did. I made it, and then we figured out a way to streamline it, to turn the ladder around, to move part of this canopy that was over top of the vomitory over a bit so I could make my descent easier. But it was crazy just singing Judas in an empty stadium. Absolutely insane, you know, and just kind of going through the whole thing and rehearsing it. And, you know, we were like, oh, we should play a couple more songs, but there was no time to play songs because everyone's rehearsing, and obviously our entrance was 2.5 minutes, which is very loud. But we were really excited for what we had coming up the next day and knew that it was going to be once in a lifetime. I mean, playing Wembley Stadium, you know, I mean, come on. I don't care if it's only for 2.5 minutes in the middle of the biggest wrestling show of all time. Fozzy played Wembley. A lot of people can't say that. So we did it. It was an amazing moment, which I'll get to. But the rehearsal itself was a good time. And thanks to Ortiz, I'm glad I ran into him for coming up with the idea to do the Freddie intro. Because it really made it, and it was one of my all-time favorite moments with Fozzy. And like I said, we'll talk more about that when we get to that tomorrow night. But after that, I had a car waiting for me. It took me from Wembley straight over to the Copper Box Arena in London, which was about an hour away from Wembley, to be a part of the RevPro 11-year anniversary show. And this was an idea that I had a few weeks prior talking to Will. I said, well, he was mentioning how he had the indie on Saturday against Takagi. And I was like, well, but, you know, take it easy. Don't get hurt. You know, as if Ospreay's ever going to take it easy. But I said, what if I attack you afterwards? And he thought that was a great idea. He's like, I was thinking the same thing, bro. If I didn't want to ask you, though, because I didn't want to, you know, bring it up if you thought it was cheeky. And I was like, no, I love doing stuff like this. I love attacking people with a mask on. I did it to Naito in New Japan. I just did it to Ricky Starks in AEW. I did it to Seth Rollins. I did it to Rey Mysterio. I did it to Kenny Omega when I came out dressed as Penta. So it's kind of part of my lineage to attack guys in a mask, and I thought it would be perfect. I even have a Bushi mask. Bushi is a guy from New Japan that gave me his mask to attack Naito with about 3 years ago. So I kept that Bushi mask, and I still have it. I sent a picture of it to Will, and he's like, the fact that you even have a Bushi mask is jokes, mate. So jokes, it's funny. And I thought this would be perfect. So we worked it out to go to the Copper Box. And once again, there's no pay involved for this. There's no money that I'm making. I mean, it's, you know, I get paid by AEW, and this was a kind of a way to enhance the angle and give it one last little push over the cliff, especially for the people who were saying that there was not a lot of a buildup. Well, this was one last way to build it up. So we go over to the Copper Box. It takes about an hour. I'm there with my wife, Jessica, and my dad, Ted Irvin, came to be a part of it. And so we're hanging out in the van, and then we go inside to the locker room area. Of course, I don't want to be around anybody because, you know, I don't want the word to get out that I'm there. So basically, they've got me in sequestered in kind of a office area. And it's got a table and, you know, like a kind of a meeting table. And then it's got a big TV screen where they put the show on because the show is streaming. And then people just came in. The promoter came in, you know, one of the backstage guys that was going to take me to the ring when the time was right came in. Ospreay came in, a couple other guys that I know. And we decided what to do. So, of course, I'll explain all that when we get there. But when I got, I think for about 3 hours, I was hanging out in the dressing room waiting for the show to waiting for him to come on, for the show to come on, maybe 2 hours. I don't know, 2 or 3 hours. Because these are long shows, obviously. It was the 10th anniversary show of RevPro. And I was expecting it to be kind of like in a, I don't know, I'm not saying like a gymnasium or something like that, a hall. Maybe like a hall. I was thinking it'd be like a bigger type of place, but I don't know, maybe a 500 people type thing. No, this is an arena with 4,000 people there. It was huge. The place was packed. And so I got to watch some pretty good indie wrestling from some guys that I didn't really know a lot about. And when I got there, I just got there in time for the Rev Pro Undisputed British Tag Team titles, which was Subculture, Flash Morgan, Webster, and Mark Andrews, with the Velocities, Jude London, and Paris Da Silva. I just saw the tail end of that, but I really got to see Ishii versus Luke Jacobs. That was a great match. I'd never heard of Luke Jacobs before. He put on a really good show, though. A fan of his now. Of course, Ishii. I love Ishii. Had a great match with him in AEW about a year ago or so. And then I got to see the Undisputed British Women's Title three-way. Alex Windsor defeated Hyann and Mickie James. Cool to see Mickie, although I never actually saw her in the flesh. I didn't see Mercedes Moné either in the flesh the next day. We just talked to her briefly on Instagram, but didn't get a chance to see her. But they had a pretty fun match. Mickie looked great, and Alex Windsor won. And I actually thought her name was Alex Winter, who, of course, is Ted, or Bill, in Bill and Ted. But it was not Alex Winter. It was Alex Windsor. They had a pretty good match. And then I saw the Undisputed British Heavyweight title, Michael Oku with Amira, defeated Trent Seven, which was another really good match. Of course, Michael Oku was there when we did the surprise at PWG. I worked with him quite a bit and really was impressed by him. I had him on Talk Is Jericho. He's now going to be on the Jericho Cruise. And I was pleasantly surprised at his match. They had a pretty good match. I thought it was a little bit overbooked. A lot of table bumps and that sort of thing. Amira took a ridiculous table bump from Trent from an apron through a table. But always cool to see Trent. He's a great guy, and they worked their asses off. And then is Will Ospreay versus Shingo. And, I mean, what can you say? It was a great match. Shingo's amazing. Ospreay's probably the best in the game right now. So they had a really good match. And then when it was done, Zack Sabre Jr. came out and cut a promo challenging Will. And then Will continued on talking about how, you know, he wasn't good at school, but he was always good at wrestling, and this is, you know, something he always believed in, and thanks to RevPro for building him up. And here now with my Bushi mask and a gray long sleeve tight shirt, because I didn't want anybody to know it was me, so he got to cover the tattoos, wear some black gloves so nobody can see the hand tattoo. And I ran into the ring. Of course, it's always a little bit scary because that, you know, that 10-second jaunt, 15-second jaunt, you got to get there fast. But, you know, you're running through the crowd, and hopefully the guardrail opens. So the guardrail opens, and in I go, and I attack Ospreay, and there's a big gasp, and, you know, I'm just beating the shit out of him. People are kind of, like, rumbling. Then I throw him into the corner, and he staggers out, and I jump out and give him a code breaker. And now people are, like, super excited because, could it be? Is it possibly? And then I slowly take my mask off, my Bushi mask off, and reveal it's Chris Jericho. And I slowly do that because I remember I did that with Rey Mysterio once years ago. I think it was in Denver. I attacked him and I took the mask off so quick, and Vince was like, you got to take your time. You got to milk that moment of taking the mask off. So I did that, really milked the moment of taking the mask off. And once I did, people popped even bigger. So it was a really great moment, a really great crowd, because they just continued to pop and pop and pop and pop and pop. And so I took the mask off, and people were first cheering, then they start booing. You, Jericho. So of course I give him the finger, and now I'm like, now I know that I'm going to be more on the heel side tomorrow at Wembley. I didn't know for sure, but at least in that night at the Copper Box, I was the total heel, and rightfully so. And then Will gets up, I hit him with a Judas effect, and you know, people are cheering and screaming. And then I grab a chair. Ozzy Open is supposed to come down and make the save. I grab a chair, and Will's getting up, and I got the chair, and I'm like, well, they're not playing their music, so I'm going to have to hit you. Sorry, buddy. And I hit him with the fucking chair. Boom. Down he goes. People are booing. They're going crazy. Out comes Ozzy Open, and I run through the other side and run at the back, and people are like, you know, tapping me on the back, and I'm shrugging my shoulders off, like, get your hands off me, and holding the cell phones in my face. I'm slapping the cell phones out of their face, out of their hands, you know, the big heel. probably breaking people's cell phones. So if I broke your cell phone, I apologize. Don't send me a bill. That's what you get when you're around a uncaged animal like Chris Jericho. So I walked out of the arena and walked back to the dressing room. It was just a great moment. Like, I love doing stuff like that because, A, once again, it added to our Wembley match, added to the Ospreay Jericho story, helped RevPro because, like, here's Chris Jericho just showing up at RevPro, so you never know who's going to be there. And I think it's just good for wrestling in general. Whenever you can do something that's a genuine surprise that people don't know they're going to be getting it and don't ever expect it. And that's why I go to great lengths to make sure that nobody sees me when I do these things, because it's part of the fun. You don't want people to know that you're there and have the word get out that Chris Jericho's backstage and there. It's like you want it to be a surprise because it's something that people will never forget. I went to RevPro and Chris Jericho walked out. It's like, you know, I went to a Fozzy gig and freaking, you know, James Hetfield came on stage or something, like, you know, not that that's happened. James, you're always welcome. But I think just, you know, it's just good for the business in general, keeps people excited, and good for RevPro. Like I said, their 10th anniversary or 11th anniversary, whatever it was, and just to have their 11th anniversary, yeah, and just to know there were so many people there, so excited to see Ospreay, so excited to see Jericho, and really built up a lot of anticipation for Wembley, which was what the idea was, and that's why I did it, and I think it really set the tone quite well for what we're about to do the next day, which once again was the biggest wrestling show of all time. And when we come back, we'll talk more about that and get into the real details of Jericho versus Ospreay, the Wembley experience, and everything else that happened. So we'll be right back right here on Talk is Jericho.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
All right, welcome back to Talk is Jericho. We are talking all about my Wembley weekend, one of the greatest of my professional career, for sure. So it's Sunday morning, and we're getting ready to go to Wembley. So I leave at about, I'd say, 11, maybe a little bit earlier, 10:30 or so. I want to be at the venue by 11. I just like getting there early. The show starts at 5, but I just like to kind of get there and get organized and get mentally sound. And so I want to get a spray tan because it's a big match. Of course, England doesn't have spray tans or tanning beds as prevalent as they do in the States. So I found one that was kind of close. And when we got there, this spray bed looked like it was from 1975. But it did the trick. And then the guy got lost coming back. So we were just driving around Wembley. There was a certain gate that I was supposed to go to. And obviously, people are starting to show up, you know. We're getting close to the showtime, and I'm getting antsy because it's one-way traffic, and there's a lot of traffic around the stadium. Finally, we get to the gate that I'm supposed to get to. I go inside and arrive probably around noon, which is fine. Obviously, it's a stadium show. I've done plenty of stadiums, but you know, this is, of course, the biggest one ever. And the coolest thing of all was we were at about 74,000 tickets sold, I think about 5 days before, and I was asking you know, our ticket experts, you think we're going to hit the highest attendance of all time, and I don't know if we'll make it. And that last week sold like thousands and thousands and thousands of tickets, like 7,000 tickets, you know, to end up with 81,035 tickets sold. It is, once again, the highest selling wrestling show ever, surpassing WWE SummerSlam 1992. And WWE WrestleMania 32 in attendance. Of course, I was not at SummerSlam, but I was at WrestleMania 32. So Mox actually sent me a text that said that Mox and I have been on the two highest paid ticket wrestling shows of all time. So that's kind of cool. And, you know, so I finally get in there and, you know, there's so much going on, so much activity because it's massive. Ospreay asks if he can change with me in my private dressing room. And of course he can. So, you know, now we get a chance to start talking about what we're going to do and, you know, just kind of start the day. And whenever, you know, I go to a show, like I said, I always try and have, you know, a few hours just to chill, get some coffee. English coffee, not quite the same. So I was able to find some American coffee, which is much better. And I never understood, too, you go get a coffee in England. And if it's like a cafe Americano, as they call it, or an Americano, sorry, it's like this little cup, like a half cup of coffee. I want a full cup. Give me a full cup of coffee. That's not much to ask for, right? I mean, I would like to have a full cup. I think it's best to have that. So, you know, get some coffee and kind of get caffeined up and start thinking of ideas. And sometimes I'll go over a match in my head, you know, a week before. Sometimes I'll you know, go over a match, you know, in my head a few days before. This one, obviously, Will's at the top of his game. I kind of wanted to see what he came with, and kind of took away the burden of me having to worry about coming up with the whole match. So I watched, I always go online and watch like the top moves of Will Ospreay, for example. And then I watched a match that he had against Kenny and a match they just had against Naito. Both were excellent. He knocked Naito the fuck out, which was amazing, and carried him through the finish even though he was knocked out. So I just came in there basically with a clean slate just to see kind of what, you know, what would happen. So wanted to meet with Will earlier because, once again, even though I haven't thought of anything, I still don't want to lollygag. Great word. I want to get in there and start get rolling and start figuring out what we're going to do. Problem is, there's so many people there. So many people from the UK wrestling scene. You know, I saw my friend Hannah Taylor there, and I saw Zach Zodiac there, and you know, I met the Billington Bulldogs for the first time, and Maya Grace. You know, just people that I've known for a long time, getting a chance to say hi to them. Session Moth Martina. You know, Michael Oku, got to talk to him about his match. So anyways, you're seeing all these kind of independent British wrestlers that they're there to experience things. You know, I know that MJF used a lot of the women in his ring entrance, and the guys just being in their backstage is cool. And prior to, I'd spoken to Sean Dean, who's one of our bookers of the extras, as we call them, and made sure that some of these people that I knew that had been trolling for a while and been in the scene for a while were actually on the show, because I thought it was a good experience for all of them. You know, Michael Oku is on the Jericho Cruise this year, which is huge. It's amazing. So, you know, getting a chance to see him was cool. And then just seeing everybody, you know, everyone's in their Sunday best, you know, all the production people, and everybody's all ready to go. So anytime you have a big show like that, there's a certain vibe to it. And everyone knows that it's not just another show, you know. And as a matter of fact, we had a big team meeting on Zoom to discuss kind of the protocols and that sort of thing. And at the end of the meeting, I just told everybody, like, just enjoy this. Like, this is not something that happens every day. It might never happen again. I mean, once again, the biggest wrestling show of all time. Like, dude, I mean, think about that. You know, I've been doing this for 33 years, and I'm having my biggest show ever on this day after thousands and thousands of matches. So, you know, just a really cool vibe and a really cool moment. So Will and I just start talking and coming up with some ideas and put together some stuff. And then I don't really like how that feels. Let's try it again. Let's do it this way. And let's think about it that way. And then Jerry Lynn comes in, and he's kind of helping out too and getting involved with some of the ideas, because he was our producer for the night. And of course, Aubrey Edwards was the official on the call. And it's just, you know, you guys kind of want to know what the behind the scenes vibe is. It's just very zen, you know. And I ain't talking about a comic book character. Very zen and very chill, but it's also like, you know, like, this is going to be big. So there's a lot of pressure and a lot of nervousness, you know. Like, people have said, you still get nervous? I get nervous for every show I have, in a good way. I think if you don't have that nervous energy, you know, you're always a little bit like, that kind of keeps you on your toes. It makes things like even more exciting. So I just really was excited, because I knew it was a chance to have a great match. You know, once again, like I said in my promo, all the social media haters that are trying to knock me off the mountain and categorize me as this, that, or the other thing, I know what I'm capable of. And like I say, I'll continue wrestling for as long as I can still have the best match on the show any given night. Not every night, but any given night. And, you know, you look at the Wrestling Observer polls, and there's, you know, I don't know, 150 people or whatever it was in the poll that voted our match the best of the night. So there you go. Mission accomplished, you know. And I think it was one of the best matches of the night. And the thing about the show was, there wasn't one show stealer. There was the main event with MJF and Adam Cole that was great. There was FTR versus the Young Bucks that was great. I mean, there was the Stadium Stampede that was amazing, you know. So there's quite a few matches in there that people might think was the best one on the show. And the fact that some thought ours was is an honor to me. So yeah, getting ready to put everything together. And once again, like I said, I got a new jacket, and I got to go get, you know, the new ring outfit, the pants, which, you know, people think that maybe we try these things on for weeks in advance. No, like here's an idea, and Chris is the name of the seamstress, sewing guy, whatever you want to call him. He made a great set of tights, although not really tights, they're more just kind of pleathery pants, which I really like wearing because they're tight but they're loose. And then of course Kate's jacket that she came up with, another one. I had two original Kate Lomax jackets on this weekend, one for Fozzie, which was the leopard print if you guys saw it, and then one for the show, which was kind of the red one. And it was just, you know, once again, you go see Tony for a bit and go see the producers and try and get something to eat, but you don't want to eat too much, but you got to eat something. So, you know, once again, it's just a very kind of cool, nerve-wracking experience to get ready for this. And I don't want to dwell on this or talk about it, but I should address it. Of course, CM Punk no longer with AEW, and Wembley was his last match, which, what a way to go out if you're going to go out. I did speak to him briefly. I was going to do a Frankensteiner off the top, and I know that he does that sometimes. So I was just curious if he was doing it. So I went and talked to him for a bit, asked him if he was doing it. He wasn't. Then I told him I was going to do the GTS and with a straight face, and I think for a second he thought that I was going to, and I was joking, of course. So yeah, I did see him that day. And once again, it's a regretful moment what happened, but Tony Khan made his decision. And like I said, CM Punk was a big part of AEW for the time he was here. And if you're going to go out, he went out on top, for sure, by having this good match with Samoa Joe in a sold-out stadium. Not sold-out, but the highest selling ticket seller of all time. So that's my thoughts on that.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When Will and I were getting together and putting together our stuff, and then, you know, the show starts, and there's some anticipation, you know, and then, of course, there's a fight that breaks out backstage, and that kind of throw things off, and then there was a little bit of influx on whose match was going to go on next, and, like, I knew that at one point, I can't go on any earlier than I'm supposed to go on, because we've got the band and the entrance and all that sort of stuff, and, but yeah, I mean, they definitely kind of threw a monkey wrench into some things. And you know, once again, we're still getting ready for our match when all this stuff is going down. So when you're going to be on a big show, I always say that if you can't go on last, you want to go on first or in the semi, you know, that sort of area. And I think we were third from last, which was, or maybe second from last. Third from last. I think after us, there was the Six Man with the House of Black and the Acclaim. But it was a great place for us to be on the show. Obviously, with Will being the hometown hero, there's going to be a lot of emphasis on that match. And like I said, this match was going to happen at the Tokyo Dome years ago. I remember talking about this in 2019 after Naito and Gato, the booker, wanted me to do Tanahashi in 2020, which was amazing. And I wanted to do Ospreay either in 2021 or 2022, also depending on with a Suzuki. I wanted to have Suzuki 1 year and Ospreay another, and maybe Kota Ibushi. And then, of course, the lockdown happened and everything kind of went on its head. But the Ospreay-Jericho match was supposed to happen years ago. So finally, it's up. It's ready. You know, and it wasn't easy to get the match. I mean, Will doesn't even work for AEW. You know, and that was another thing that we had to kind of figure out that from the political standpoint. And then, you know, we were going to have somebody run in or what was going to happen. And kind of came up with the idea for Sammy Guevara to be down there with me. And Don Callis is there with him. But putting together the match, I don't want this to be about Don and Chris because Will is a babyface. And even though Don is the biggest heel in the company, so they have to be together. But on this show, it was kind of like a standalone. You know, it's a standalone show, not so much worried about heels and baby faces and who's with who. We're continuing to tell our stories that we need to continue to tell for AEW and Dynamite. But on that night, I mean, Will Ospreay was probably as big of a baby face as you're going to get. So we kind of put together the match accordingly. We're all ready to go. And then you start getting to that 0 hour. We're like, you know, you're almost up next. And then you got to get ready to roll. And it's a really cool feeling to know that you've got this possible potential great match coming up with this great crowd, and they were going nuts for everything. Sometimes stadium shows are hard because with an open roof, sometimes the sound goes up and out. Thankfully, that night in London, they had the roof closed. But still, it's such an expansive building that sometimes I remember Edge and Jericho at WrestleMania, whatever it was in Phoenix. I thought, there's nobody making any noise. Like, do we suck? What the hell is going on here? And then you watch it back and it sounds super loud. But at the time, the noise is just going outwards, not coming down to you. That was not the case that night. You could see the crowd was hot. They were ready. They were ready to rock, you know. And once again, I knew that we were going to have a great crowd. The moment we announced the show, some pundits were saying, they won't even put 20,000 in there. It's like, I knew we would have a good crowd. Did I think we'd have 81,000? No, I did not. But I knew that we were hot in England. AEW has the best television ratings out of any wrestling show in England. And it's not just London and England. It's the UK. It's Wales. It's Scotland. It's Northern Ireland. It's Ireland. And all of Europe. You can get to London in an hour and a half, you know, via a flight from Germany or Spain or Italy. So, and people came over from the States. You know, I had a couple friends that came over from the States specifically to see the show. You know, my dad came over just to see the show. So I knew there was going to be a lot going on. And a lot of action and a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement. And that's exactly what happened, because we had that in spades and in droves for the entire show. So now I'm ready to go. Time comes that, okay, you guys are up. And of course, I got to leave about halfway through the coffin match because I got to go back up to my perch where Fozzie is. You know, and time-wise, there's always the time constraints, and you know, I thought that we had a little bit less time than we should have had, and we went even less than that. We went about 15 and a half minutes, and I think we had 17, and I was hoping for 18. But we kind of structured the match because you don't want to go over. So it's okay to go under. And at the end of the day, I mean, who cares? You can have a great match in 4 minutes, and you can have a stinker of a match in 60. It doesn't matter the time you have. It's the quality of what you put together and, of course, how much the crowd is into it. So they come and grab me, and now I gotta go and basically walk up some back stairs, and they wanted me to wear a hood and a hoodie, and I'm like, it doesn't matter. I mean, if 20 people see me here, it's okay. And of course, most of that staging area is blocked off from the fans anyways, because that's where the stage is, and no one wants to sit behind the stage. But as soon as we started walking and go out that door, you can hear this buzz and this complete din of humanity and know, okay, this is real. This shit is going to happen, and it's going to happen fast. You know, and in 25 minutes, they're going to be back in that dressing room. So you better have the best, you know, 20, 25 minutes of your life and your career. And I came pretty close to that. And when we'll discuss more when we come back on Talk is Jericho, we'll get into the actual match and the entrance itself. Jericho versus Ospreay at All in Wembley.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, so welcome back to Talk to Jericho, talking about the Wembley weekend, and the time has come. They take me, like I said, up to the platform, and I got the microphone. And also, what you might not know is I had inner ears too, inner ear monitors, so I can hear myself singing. I had that over top of the jacket, and I only wear inner ear monitor in one ear because I like hearing the crowd. So that's kind of where we were at. I walked up into the platform. And dude, I mean, you can just see, like, literally there's 81,000 people. And when I mentioned before that it's just one kind of living, breathing entity, kind of being that high up and looking down was such a crazy experience, you know. And then it's like the video package plays for Ospreay and Jericho. And then the cue is Rich plays a power chord. And I start going, hey, oh. And dude, I'm like, there I am, Freddie Mercury from Live Aid. And it was crazy. Like, I just could not believe that I was doing that. And people were saying, like, how was it? Like, it was unbelievable to be up there and be doing the Freddie Mercury and having the people respond. I mean, I'll tell you what, it's one of those things that I'll never forget. Never, ever forget. Did kind of the whole thing. Ayo, 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 ayo. All right. Because that's what Freddie did. And as soon as I do that, Rich hits the little intro. Now, that intro that you heard is how we do Judas Live, with that little intro that Rich kind of created for it to put on before the song, before it goes run down 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 down. It's like chicka chicka pa chicka, whatever you heard, kind of the drums and the round. So when that plays, here I am. Now I'm in my complete gear and wrestling gear, and I got the gloves on, and I got the jacket on. So I run down the flight of stairs. And keep in mind, I got a time constraint because I got to be down for "You Are Beautiful on the Inside." So I run down the steps. Then I have to run across the row where – and when I run in the steps too, they put a box there because there's kind of a little bit of a drop from one step level to the next. I get on that box. I jump down. I run across the row past Sam's of course, Sam Abernathy, our amazing front of house. Run past his rig, his setup, his soundboard. And then I go to the railing, climb up on the railing, and then I put one foot on the ladder, and then I start climbing down the ladder. And we were supposed to move the awning back so that I would have more space to get on the ladder. Of course, somebody forgot to do that. So I'm kind of like on top of the awning, the canvas, but I just got to get past it, and I'm holding onto the rail. I got a microphone in one hand. I got the in-ears in the other. I got an entire match in my head that I got to worry about too. Climb down the ladder. Finally get onto the floor of the tunnel, turn around, and it's like, "You are beautiful on the inside." And I walk through the tunnel, and Sammy's waiting there with the bat, which, by the way, you want a little trivia? That was Sting's bat, because we didn't bring Floyd with us to the UK. I didn't realize they weren't bringing it, and why would they? So we used Sting's bat, of course. A little behind the scenes. And there I go. I'm walking, singing Judas with the band playing, and there's a little bit of a delay. It was slightly a little bit behind the beat because of the delay coming from the platform of the band and to the floor. Now I'm like 100 feet away, but BJ's vocal, he sings the higher part, "And we'll drag you down." So he's singing that part, not tracks, ladies and gentlemen. That's actually a real live bass player who sings with me and doubles that track, which is how you do it. So as soon as he kicked in, I was like, "Oh, I'm a slight bit off." So I adjusted, and then here we go, walking all the way to the ring to sing, singing Judas, and get into the ring, and just see this one. "What have I become?" And everyone's just singing it, and like, dude, what a moment, man! Like singing our song that we wrote and we recorded and we created. And now we've got 81,000 people joining in and singing along. And a lot of these people have never seen Fozzy live. A lot of these people probably even know that I sang that song. I mean, I don't know. I don't know who's following Chris Jericho's career, especially with that many people. I mean, obviously, you think it's more than just hardcores. I think a lot of people got caught up in the event of it, like going to a Stones concert. You don't have to be a Stones fan to go see the Stones play live, right? Like, it's more of just the event, the cultural event. I think there's a lot of people that went to this show to be a part of the event. So I don't know if they watched Fozzy before or knew anything about us or what we do. So I think a lot of people were pretty impressed. And actually, I'm just looking right now at the YouTube views of the Judas video. It went up a million since last week. It's almost at 64 million. It was at almost 63 before we went. So people went and watched the video, so which is cool. I mean, that's how people consume music nowadays. So I went in the ring and sing the song, and it's 2.5 minutes, but I'll tell you what a great moment. You know, we're already thinking about next year. Do we want to do it next year, and how can we make it better, and will we have, you know, some pyro on the guitars, or maybe a zip line, or whatever it may be. Anyways, it was probably the best entrance on the show, one of the best entrances maybe of all time, and definitely the best entrance of my career. Although the choir Judas was pretty good too, but actually just playing it live, I mean, you can't beat that in front of 81,000 people. So then Will came out and did his entrance, and man, we get in the ring, and here we are, you know. And Will obviously is one of the best athletes and super smart with wrestling. What I bring to the table is experience, and I said, let's just stand there and see what happens. And people just standing there chanting Will, and you know, whatever they're chanting, "This is awesome," before you even start out, whatever it may be. And here we go, which was really cool because we started off just by getting kind of in a smacking fight, slapping each other in the face. I wanted to kind of hold on to that and do that a little bit longer, but we moved on a little bit quicker than I would have liked. But just amazing. You know, Will hit me with a Sky Twister press from the top, and I made sure to be there to catch him because sometimes guys don't. And that one caught me, and then in the ring we go. I give him a German suplex on the apron side. You know, work on him a bit. And then, like I said, we knew that we had 17 minutes. We went a little bit shorter than that. We could have done a few things differently to make it a little longer, but longer and shorter doesn't make a great match. A great match is just the atmosphere and the vibe and what the guys are doing. So I really loved kind of some of the counters and the reversals that we had. Obviously, I went for a Jericho cutter, like an Oz cutter, but a Jericho cutter. People thought I was going for a Lion Salt or maybe. We kind of did bonk heads, but you know, I landed kind of top heavy on my head. But you know, I've never taken that bump, and I don't know if he's ever given an Oz cutter. So you know, sometimes things happen. This is the first time Will and I have ever been in the ring together. We have never touched each other before, ever. So really excited and happy with the whole match. And you know, there's a couple minor things that go wrong, as they do in every match. But just some of the counters, and everyone, of course, was talking about when Ospreay went for the Stormbreaker, and I reversed it into a Walls of Jericho, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's so amazing. Like, I've been doing that spot for years, man. You know, the Frankensteiner off the top, and just all the stuff that we contributed and combined in there, and the multiple code breakers, and him kicking out of the Judas effect, and then me kind of giving him the finger, you know, daring him to pin me when he finally did. And I mean, just a great match. It really was one of my favorites that I've had. I think Wrestling Observer gave it 4 3/4 stars. I can't get another 5-star match to save my life. I think the Tony Khan says the Quake by the Lake, Moxley Jericho, and the Jericho Ospreay should have been 5 stars. So, hey, 4 3/4 is pretty close. So just round up. You know, and most importantly, it's great getting 5 stars and 4 3/4 stars. But most importantly, all that matters is the fans. And if people enjoyed it, and they did in droves, you know, everyone seemed to think it was one of the better matches of the night and one of the better matches I've had for a while. You know, how could it not be being there with Will Ospreay? But, you know, I came up with a couple ideas too, guys, right? But just the atmosphere. I mean, you can't go wrong with that many people just enjoying this. And obviously, Will's the hometown hero. So they're going to cheer for him, and they cheered for me and booed for me. And some people booed for Don Callis, and, you know, just all across the board, just one of those nights that we all worked so hard to do. And work so hard to be a part of, because it really is, like I said, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. You know, and I wanted Sammy out there with me to continue our storyline. I also wanted him to be able to feel that. I know he wanted to wrestle, and there was at one point an idea to do Danny Garcia versus Sammy. But we just, you know, you can't do everything on the show. And I wanted him to be able to feel it. And when he was out there after Judas, he's like, this is fucking great, man. This is great. You can see him kind of jumping up and down. So he feels it, right? He wants to be on the show next year, but now he knows just what it feels like to be in that atmosphere and around that mass of humanity. So I have no doubt that Sammy will be on the show next year for sure. And so many people weren't, and the ones that were, I think everybody had just a great showing. It was a great night for pro wrestling. You know, after the Ospreay thing was done, I give Sammy a shove. And why is that? Well, because we're still continuing on. You know, that's the biggest thing when you do a WrestleMania or All In. Like, you think about this event for months, and you put all this time into it, and you get new gear, and you do a ring entrance, and you put together the match, and you tear the house down. And then you get up the next day, and away we go. Time to do it again on Wednesday, boys. And that's what wrestling is. You know, there is no off season. You know, you win the Stanley Cup or you win the Super Bowl, you get 3 or 4 months to, you know, go on vacation and talk about it. Not for us in AEW or in wrestling in general. You go straight to the next gig. So come back through the curtain and you know, just so excited and happy about how everything went. And it's just one of those moments, you know, Will and I shared something that can never be duplicated, and something that no one else will ever know what it was like to be in the ring with Jericho and Ospreay for our first ever confrontation and have such a great match and a match that was so critically acclaimed. And once again, me just shoving it right up the social media haters' asses. Like, like, you know, I'm sure people want to hate on Mick Jagger too. And I'm 30 years younger than Mick, but he's still the best front man in the world. I'm sure, to the chagrin of critics that probably predicted his demise in the 70s. But he's like, you can hate me if you want. I'm still going to continue to be great, and people are going to enjoy my work. And I feel the same way. So it was just a great night. I really enjoyed working with Will and just being there and seeing kind of his advancement and just knowing how huge of a future he has. And I'm glad I was able to be a part of it. You know, it's the same thing with MJF and Adam Cole and all the guys in the Stadium Stampede match and, you know, FTR guys and Young Bucks, and just so exciting to, and Kenny Omega, you know, and Hangman Page and Darby Allin. And I mean, and also too, like, you know, I did great as fairly well, whatever you want to say, as the Elder Statesman. What about Sting? He crushed it too. Like, Sting's a decade plus older than me, and he's still, you know, just doing a great job out there too. So it's very inspiring. It was great for the company. You know, and you finish up and you kind of just sit there for a while, you know, and I was a little bit, I'd been knocked a little bit loopy, I think from the Sky Twister press. And you know, you come back and you go, did we do all this stuff? I still don't remember taking the Spanish Fly, you know, and once again, it's just how it goes. You know, sometimes you get whacked and it takes a few minutes to come back to earth, but that's pro wrestling and no concussion or anything. It's just kind of, you get your bell rung a little bit and that's how it goes. And, just to be able to sit there afterwards and you talk over the match and you think about all the stuff that you liked and the things that you didn't like. I mean, that's part of, you know, being in the business, you know what I mean? So, just a great moment and a great night. And, you know, afterwards there was a lockdown of about an hour where you couldn't go anywhere because they closed the roads to get everybody out of there. I helped a friend of mine find their way back to the hotel because they were lost, you know, and then you wait. And the roads open, go back to the hotel, and there's, you know, afterwards a little bit of a function after the show. I went and hung out with Oj Hart, which was great to see him. Obviously, it's so awesome to have the Hart family involved with AEW. You know, and seeing Dean Malenko and talking to him about everything, and Tony, of course, was there, which is great because he's got so many things going on, and he's super excited about it, and just reconnecting with some other people that were around, and, you know, just a great night all across the board, you know. And then, of course, the next day there's an air traffic control shutdown, so flights are delayed, and can we make it out? And we did. We got out on time. Some of my other friends were delayed for an hour or two, but it worked out perfect where everyone made it home okay. There's still some people stuck there on Wednesday when we did the next show in Chicago, which, of course, is when I apologized to Sammy, and that kind of broke down a bit. And here we are getting ready to resume the Sex Gods trek to the tag team championships. And we're going to start that this week against Aussie Open. By the time you hear this, you might have already seen that match. And if you haven't, it's coming up Wednesday night on Dynamite. And, you know, you continue the story. And like I said, as weird as it seems, because you'd be like, how can you guys just jump straight into the next thing? It's like, well, that's just how it goes. You know, you work your way to this great storyline, this great match. Ospreay and Jericho happens. And then, you know, Ospreay goes back to New Japan and I'm in AEW, and where do we go from there? So there was some ideas to incorporate some other guys to go to the next level, or to go to the next story. And we decided to do it the way we did it, which was great. So once again, one of the greatest professional weekends of my career, if not the greatest weekend of my career professionally. Very glad that it all worked out. Very glad I got to work with Ospreay, and Fozzy got to play Wembley, and Fozzy had the biggest show we've ever had at the O2. So very excited about the future for AEW. I'm excited we're going back to Wembley. But yeah, that was a moment. You know, I mean, how often have I done a solo podcast about a match or a show? They're very rare. It's only the big ones or ones that are complete disasters, like the Super Liger show. But this was the opposite of that. It was just a great moment. And once again, I thank every one of the 81,035 people who bought tickets. I think with the comps and with the crew and with the stage people, there was about almost 85,000 people in the building. We had more tickets sold than Live Aid did with Freddie Mercury and Queen. Like I said, the greatest gig of all time. And now I can say I played Wembley. You know, I talked to Wolfgang Van Halen a couple weeks ago here on Talk is Jericho, and he was talking about playing Wembley for the Taylor Hawkins tribute and tribute to his dad, Eddie Van Halen. And now I can say, yeah, we played Wembley too, you know. And there's a great graphic that somebody posted that I posted on my Instagram page. I'm just pulling up right now. It was really hilarious where it said there was let me just see. There was, like I said, there's a graphic where it says Aerosmith, Fenway Park, 33,700 tickets. The Beatles, Shea Stadium, 55,000. AC/DC, Donington, 72,500. Fozzy, Wembley Stadium, 81,035. So, hey, Fozzy played it, you know, and it doesn't matter what the details of it were, we played it. It's like my dad used to say, they don't ask you how you scored the goals, they just ask you how many that you scored. So from now on, we can say in London, we sold over 1,000 tickets, and we played Lemmy Stadium. Lemmy would have loved that. Wembley Stadium. I bet you Lemmy would have loved to have been there to play Wembley Stadium, but Fozzy was. And once again, thanks to all you guys for coming to the Fozzy gig. Thanks to all you guys for going to the Rev Pro show. Hope you enjoyed that. That was a blast appearing there. And thanks to all of you who watched All In live, all 81,035 of you, and more with the comps, like I said, 85,000 people, whatever it was. And thanks to everybody who watches Dynamite every week and continues to follow our stories. And thanks to everyone who listens to Talk is Jericho. This was a lot of fun to do this. And Wanted to give you guys a little bit of a behind the scenes of my Wembley journey. So we will see you on Wednesday on Dynamite, and we'll see you with Fozzy very soon. Our new song is very close to being released, probably within the next few months. And we're going back out on tour in the States in October, November, and we're going back to the UK probably in February. So lots of great stuff coming up, and I'm really glad that I got to hang with you in London. And we'll see you again very soon. What a weekend.
Oh, yeah.